Hello, hello, hello. Welcome back to Anything But the Beatles, the show that's about anything but the Beatles. I'm Ethan Alexanian.
And I am Andy Nichols, back again here for installment number two of this little mini-series that my partner and I started.
And partner, what are we talking about this time?
This month, we are discussing ELO's 1981 space...
There was a mild pun.
Yeah. We're space time travel epic time album from 1981.
Where did I put mine? I had it all ready to go and hold up.
Yeah.
But then I put it over there.
Back when Ethan and I came up with this concept, we came up with a list in about a half hour conversation of about 10 records that we wanted to talk about. And I don't know if I suggested time or you did, probably me, because I don't think at the time you were aware of it. And I said, let's do it. And you were like, okay.
Well, I knew of time.
Right. And I said, you know what?
I knew Twilight.
Twilight. And of course, Hold On Tight. But I thought it would be a kind of cool one to tackle. Well,
because you saw the, like, hey partner, look at that. The ELO poster behind you.
That's why I think I thought of him. And I saw the ELO poster. And then, of course, in our conversations, you told me that you were such a big fan of the early ELO, pre-ELO move with Roy Wood. And Ethan, if anybody doesn't know, is just a huge fan of that 1960s psychedelic rock. I mean, that's Ethan's go-to. That's what he likes. That's what he loves.
That's my domain.
That's his domain. And
your domain is the Prague.
Outside of the world of the Beatles, Prague rock was mine. So initially, that's why I saw the ELO poster hanging on his wall. And I'm like, okay, well, he likes ELO, but maybe we'll tackle something that's a little bit outside of his kind of period. So that's why I suggested, I like the poppier side of ELO personally, but I love it all. But I asked Ethan if we could do this record, and he was like, sure, let's do it. And
although I do like saying, oh, my favorite ELO stuff is the really early stuff.
Of course.
I'm kind of a bit, that's the cooler answer to say. It's not cool if you say my favorite ELO song is Shine a Little Love. Mine may be.
Really?
Yeah. Oh yeah. I fell in love with that song when I saw the Jeff and ELO back in 2019, and they had all these lasers pointing, and you know, yep. It was fantastic.
That was awesome. The 2019 tour was great. I got to see Jeff and company for the first time in 2016 at the Radio City Music Hall, and man, like, you watch that show and you say to yourself, why the hell was this guy not touring for the last 20 years?
Hold on, you saw him at Radio City Music Hall.
Yep.
So I back on an episode of Fans on the Run, I was talking to someone and they said, I saw Jeff Lynne's ELO at Radio City Music Hall. They said, guess who I ran into that night? Roy Wood. So I think you might have been at the same show as Roy Wood.
He did two. I think he did two dates that night back in September of it was in September of 2016, and it was incredible. I don't know if it was show night one or night two, but it was the first time I had seen Jeff Lynne, and it was absolutely incredible. And Richard Tandy was on that tour in 2019 when I saw him. He was not.
Richard Tandy was not there. Sadly,
he was not there. Sadly, but for that show, I was in the second row. In New Jersey, and with my uncle who turned me on to ELO, and that was an incredible experience. That's where I got this shirt, where Ethan got his poster. I'm sure.
And kind of off in the distance there, I have the tour program.
Yeah. So we're going to geek out a little bit about ELO in this episode, and we're going to talk about time and the album and the songs, but it's kind of just a general, it's a general ELO geek fest episode today, which is
like with the last show, we spent a considerable amount of time talking about what the Who were doing prior to sellout, what they were doing post sellout.
Yeah. And thank you everybody who tuned into our first episode about the sellout. We're very happy with the feedback on that one. Ethan and I really had a blast talking about that album, especially since the box set was coming out at the same time as we did that. So we thank you.
Speaking of, how quickly did you get your 2 LP mono?
Pretty quickly. pretty quickly, quicker than you.
Quicker than me. And did yours arrive unwarped?
It was fine. It was fine. It was pristine.
See, that was not the case with me.
It was late and it was warped. Yes.
It was warped. I had to put my record weight on so it wouldn't skip.
Did you not want to bother with the whole return process?
No. Because it's international. I have to send it back down to the States. And
so you took a warped record and you just put your record weight on there to just make it work. Which record, the first disc or second one?
Both were kind of warped, but the first one was more warped than the second, you know, the one with the actual album.
Right. No, the actual album that you wanted to hear.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you only got the mono. You didn't get the stereo?
I'll probably get the stereo soon.
Little greedy of the Who to put out two different vinyl pressings with not having the same bonus tracks on either. That's a little greedy on their part.
Well, you know? But I think it's smarter. Because imagine if they put out a mono and a stereo, but they had the same bonus tracks.
Well, that's how it's supposed to be.
Well, but then people would be like, yeah, well, I want the mono mix and the stereo mix. And, you know, I feel like this is more bang for your buck.
Yeah, you got to buy another copy if you want everything, like I do and you do. So, let's talk a little ELO. You know that the early ELO is your favorite, mid to late is mine. What do you
I'll say mid to late is mine too.
Okay. You know,
from like Face the Music to hell, I even like the Xanadu soundtrack.
Hell, that's great too.
Oh yeah. I'm Alive. Come on.
Listen, Xanadu is a great track. Thank God he re-recorded it himself.
Well, I'm not a big fan of his re-recording.
No, I love his re-recording of Xanadu.
It sounds a little too, you know, raw, rough around the edges.
Does he like the Olivia Newton-John version better?
Like, if he had just, you know, taken out her vocals, kept the ELO backing vocals.
And
just laid over, you know, new vocals. I feel like that would have been.
Remember, that was a nice little bonus surprise in that flashback box set from the early 2000s, having that re-recording on there. Talk to me about your early impressions of Time as a record overall.
Well, it's not really what I expected when I first listened to it all the way through in relation to what I kind of was familiar with ELO. Because this is a proper concept album. And I know they, you know, El Dorado. Where is it?
El Dorado was as well. Sure.
I have it in my magic pile. El Dorado was a concept album.
Through and through. Sure.
I'm not the biggest fan of El Dorado, if I'm being honest.
I agree with you. I like El Dorado for a couple of the tracks, but start to finish, I think Time works better as a concept album than El Dorado.
I do. I agree with that.
The timing of a concept album for the early 80s is pretty ballsy when you think about it. You know, it's 1981 here. So concept albums really were, that's like an early prog movement. By the late, punk rock had really eradicated that. To do a concept album in the early 80s, clearly past their prime, which they kind of were here. I mean, out of the blue, 1977, 78, ELO was just on the stratosphere of popularity. Okay.
They were stratosphere literally, because they were traveling around the world in a big giant spaceship.
Right. I mean, 79, they continue with Discovery, which is a great, you know, which again was probably the beginning of the paring down of ELO as a band without the strings.
I've talked to a couple friends about this before, and I said I feel like around Out of the Blue into Discovery, is when they stopped being the Electric Light Orchestra and just started being ELO. If that makes sense.
It does. Meaning like the whole ELO vibe became more pushed than Electric Light Orchestra.
Yeah.
Fair assessment, which I would agree with. Now, having said that, there's plenty of the orchestra on Out of the Blue. There is not, however, starting with the follow-up, Discovery.
It all started going downhill when they started putting that damn spaceship on the albums.
The Frisbees, right?
The Frisbees.
Starting with a New World Record, right? Or
did they have those at the concerts? Do they have Frisbees?
I'm sure at some point they did. If not now, in the 70s, I'm sure.
Oh, because I wish I had bought one of those if that was there.
Yeah, it became that again, branding, right? Branding, the image, that became the brand that people. So it's kind of one of those bands. I mean, Jeff Lynne is obviously, there's no mistaking him as the front man of the band. But ELO is one of those bands where
that period of time where Jeff Lynne wasn't really in ELO. And they kind of just continued on.
Well, yeah, but nobody really cared, did they? Was that what you're talking about when they were just the orchestra then?
Oh, when they were EL or the Electric Light Orchestra Part 2.
Part 2, right. Yeah, so I think, you know.
Even though that had more ELO members than current ELO.
And no disrespect to any member of ELO, because they're all incredibly talented. But Jeff Lynne is the brains behind that band. And I mean, there's been so much. I mean, listen, we're just two fans. We're just two casual fans. There are some passionate ELO fans and authors out there, which
we're not claiming to know everything.
You know, I was talking to Ethan before we started recording today that on the Hoffman Forum, there's like a 500 page thread topic on the 1983 follow-up to Time, Secret Messages. And there's a guy on there called Shared Ender, who's like an ELO savant. I mean, he spent like years researching ELO, and I've learned a lot from him reading these posts. So, you know, we're not at that level at all. So, you know, if we're wrong on something, you know, don't shoot us. Okay. We're just, you know, we're casual to moderate fans of the music. But back to my point with ELO, they're one of those bands where the public doesn't have to know who the members are. They just know the brand. And to Ethan's point,
they know the sound,
they know the brand, they see this flying spaceship, they know, oh, it's those guys that sound like this. Mm-hmm. So it's not like as identifiable as a Led Zeppelin or a Who or a Stones or a Beatles.
Well, even with the Stones, you know, people care about the tongue. It's like, oh, that's the Stones. But even then, they're like, oh, yeah, Mick and Keith, right.
Mick and Keith, right. And I said the same thing about, I had a conversation with a friend one day about Steely Dan. He said, is Steely Dan a duo or a group? I said, it's a group. He says, no, it's a duo. I said, no, I think it's a group. There's two frontmen, but it's a group.
Mm-hmm. But those two frontmen are the only constants.
Yeah, but they've had some constants throughout the band was always shuffling. But I always thought of it as a band. I don't know. You disagree?
I mean, now is not the time or place to debate the merits of Steely Dan.
And we could do that another time, but
and tangent. Its categorization.
Slight tangent. But back to Time. This was a record that I probably discovered, I don't know, 20 years ago, just collecting all the albums. And I'm like, okay, don't know anything about this record. Looks cool. I'll try it. I knew Hold On Tight, but I wanted to really see what ELO had to offer after their big peak of success. And this was, okay, I'm going to give this a shot. And it remains one of my favorite records by the band all these years later. That's why I suggested that we talk about it today. So,
well, I had only been familiar with a couple of ELO albums per se. Like I knew a lot of the hits and stuff from all over their career, but to me some of them just kind of blend in or blend together, you know, flipping through the record store bins, and it's like, oh, that's, you know, ELO, I've seen that.
Right, because they sold so many records that you'd go through the cutout bins and you'd see a new world record or Out of the Blue.
Yeah.
Because when you start thumbing through record bins, you become almost like programmed to know, oh, that's that one, that's that one, that's that one.
Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, yeah, that's one of the ELO albums. They all just kind of blend together.
Right. You know, and some people, you know, really like this music. Some people really don't. They think it sounds, you know, I mean,
I don't know what's wrong with those people who don't like it.
Music taste is subjective. So good on you if you don't like it, but don't hate on us for liking it.
Yeah.
I just love the way they use the vocoder in all their music. You know, the way this album, it's freaky good. It's freaky good.
Well, they were kind of pioneers with the vocoder there. You know, Richard Tandy.
Yeah. You know, the whole, you know, please turn me over, which I tell everybody that's what he's saying. He's not saying Mr. Blue Sky. He says, please turn me over.
Yeah.
But, I think when he toured, I think he played, did he play Twilight when you saw him?
I'm not sure if he played Twilight. He might have.
Yeah. You know, you hear the prologue, the album opens up with prologue, you hear that crazy space, you're like, okay, we're definitely going on a trip. And then it goes into Twilight. And again, this is like right out of the gate, you get a big poppy song, commercial, great beat.
Yeah, like one of the fast numbers.
Right out of the gate, you're like, okay, this is gonna be a really popping album, you know. All the ELO trademarks, you know, is it all that.
The harmonies are in full swing here.
Yeah.
That's what ELO is to me. It's the harmonies.
Harmonies and production, right? I mean,
harmonies and production.
The guy's a perfectionist. I mean, and if you haven't had a chance to see that documentary, I highly recommend you check it out. Mr. Blue Sky, the story of Jeff Lynne.
I can't see the documentary. I don't know where it is.
It's I believe it's on Apple Music or iTunes or whatever. That's where I bought it on there.
Okay, I'll have a look, see if it's there.
I might have it. I'll send it to you. But it is so damn good.
We don't condone piracy here.
No, I'm gonna just sell. I bought it, so I'm gonna share it with you.
Yeah,
I bought it. I have the receipt. But it was that good. It's a really good documentary. I mean, you've seen clips of it, right?
Yeah. Well, the clips I've seen are talking about Jeff Lynne's previous endeavors before ELO.
With Eric Idle saying how they should have just kept the band The Idle Race as the name.
Yeah. And with that being said, I'm going to do a little bit of a brief history of Jeff Lynne here.
Please do.
For those of you who, you know, don't really know much about Jeff. Because, well, a lot of people know before ELO they were The Move, but less people know that before they were The Move, or before Jeff joined The Move, he was in a fantastic group. They were contemporaries with The Move, you know, the Birmingham scene, mm-hmm. The Idle Race, which this album, The Birthday Party, is it's one of the greatest albums of the 60s, in my opinion. It's so idiosyncratic.
What year did it come out?
1968.
Okay.
And then he teamed up with Roy and Bev, and he joined The Move.
Move.
But The Move were already, you know, well established by that point. They had, you know, couple top five hits. And then after they recorded the album Message from the Country, where the lineup just went down to Roy Wood, Bev Bevan, and Jeff Lynne, they decided to go forward with a project called the Electric Light Orchestra, and this was the result of that endeavor. The first album called the Electric Light Orchestra, or
in the America, No Answer.
Yeah, could you tell the studio audience why?
I can, because Jeff, I believe, was trying to reach the record company to tell them about the record and something like that. And that nobody picked up the phone at the record company. So they just called it No Answer.
That sounds about right, I think.
Yeah. as legend has it, or somebody from the record company was trying to get on phone with, and I believe in America, they were on UA, right?
Yeah, United Artists.
They were on UA.
Yeah.
I love one of those little, you've heard that clip of John Lennon talking about Showdown, right?
Yeah. Yeah, Son of Beatles.
We're gonna play a song called Showdown by Electric Light Orchestra, which should have been a bigger hit, but UA didn't push their little fingers behind it, as he says. That's the John Lennon interview with Dennis Elsis from WNEW in September of 74, which is just awesome. It's
fantastic.
I
can't even imagine how good that must have been for Jeff to hear John call them, you know, Son of Beatles.
Yeah. You know, they wanted to just pick us up where Walrus left off with. And, I mean, you can't get any better praise than that, man, you know?
Yeah. And although it was a lot easier to keep track of what record label they were on in the States, because in England, first they were on Harvest,
right.
And then they were on Warner Brothers. And then they were also on United Artists. And then they were on Jet.
Jet started with what, a New World Record?
I think Jet started
Face
with
the Music.
I think it was either Face the Music or New World Record.
Right. Yeah, because they bounced all over the place. And I actually think they were even initially managed by Don Arden, actually.
They were managed by Don Arden.
Yes, Don Arden of the Sharon Osbourne's father, Don Arden.
Yeah, the music industry mafioso man.
Yeah.
The man who bullied the Small Faces out of Decca.
Yes. So, yeah, they jumped around a little bit there label-wise until they really kind of made it as a band, as Electric Light Orchestra. Those early ELO records are vastly different than the later period, though. I mean, ELO 2, I mean, it got tracks like, you know, what's that, No Hall of the Mountain King or whatever?
Yeah.
Very, very different stuff.
Well, there's a seismic shift with ELO very early on, because at first, you know, the two main guys were Roy Wood and Jeff Lynne.
Right.
And then Roy Wood left like a song or two into ELO 2.
Right.
And so he's uncredited on that album.
On which one?
ELO 2.
ELO 2. Yeah. That's the one with only like six tracks on it. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And of course, you've got Roll Over Beethoven on it, but very, very different music compared to what they became, you know, when they became really kind of really bigger. I mean, On the Third Day has what, My Mama Belle, which was, and then Showdown, of course.
I think Showdown was only on the American version of the record, right, oddly enough.
105.38, of course, kicks off. I mean, that's 105.38 Overture is... That's just majestic.
I don't even know how to describe that song. It's one of my favorite pieces of recorded music ever.
Yeah, and it's on the first ELO record. I mean, it opens right out of the gate with the cellos. Okay, and it's like, okay, this is...
It sounds like he's playing the cello with like a rusty saw. It's heavy metal cello music.
I do like the re-recorded version of this, though. You know how he re-recorded all his hits? I like the re-recording of it. I do. You don't?
I mean, I don't mind the re-recordings.
Yeah, this was... Now, hearing this song live was pretty damn awesome.
My only nitpick with this, because I nitpick about a lot of things, he didn't play it in the original key.
No, he did not. But you... I mean, this is a... You know... This is pretty. There's some high vocals on this track.
No, they played it higher than it was on the record.
They did?
Yeah.
I don't seem to remember that.
Like, the original was like in the key of C, and when they played it, it was like key of D.
I have to go listen to the live, because was it on the live over Wembley thing? It's on the live over Wembley album. I have to take a listen to that again. Yeah. Which is another great live.
The set lists haven't changed much in the past.
No, he's been very consistent. I heard one person say about the show, they were like, it was good. It just was like, very like routine. Like,
yeah, going through the motions.
But you know what? That's okay. Cause like, mm-hmm. I don't know what you're expecting. I mean, it's an ELO show. So with mm-hmm. Jeff Lynne, I mean, you're getting the music performed.
You're seeing a band with the word orchestra in the title.
Right. Well, now they're actually called just Jeff Lynne's ELO.
Yeah. Oh.
Which, whatever. It's ELO. I mean, come on.
I don't know why it's Jeff Lynne's ELO. He bought back the rights from Bev Bevan. He could just call it ELO.
He probably could. Because, I mean, what the hell are those guys doing? The orchestra? I mean, they're not doing anything now.
Well, I think they still are.
Are they?
Yeah. But, you know, Bev Bevan's not there. I'm not even sure if they still have Mick Kaminsky. I think he might be dead.
I think he might have passed. Yeah, I think he passed away.
Yeah.
You know, so, of course, band politics, shit happens, right? Legal mm-hmm. things. Well, you hate to say, and it seems like every band is mired with these issues. Name changes, label variations, lineup changes. You know, ELO is no exception to that rule, mm-hmm. for sure. But, God, man, they made some great music.
Aside from what we're talking about today, what would you say your like top three ELO songs are?
Top three ELO songs are, yeah. as of today. Wow. I'll go with, just give me a minute here. I'm going to go with Wild West Hero.
Okay.
The one that closes out of the blue. I'll go with The Diary of Horace Wimp from Discovery. Oh, from
Discovery.
I freaking love The Diary of Horace Wimp.
I love it too.
A recent favorite of mine would have to be Shangri-La.
Okay.
Because it's got the Beatle thing going on in that track, you know? I mean, listen, I could pick, you know, I could listen. I could give me Stepping Out. Stepping Out is great. But I definitely like the 75 period on a lot more. But again, I do let me there's some the earlier some early gems we just talked about. Showdown 10538, which I did not really know until much later in my ELO. I knew it was a song and I was like, it's on this first record and they weren't that good. And then I don't know, 10 years ago, I was like, damn, this is really good. No, those would be three favorites of mine. How about you?
I'm trying to avoid picking songs that are like, oh yeah, my three favorites are Don't Bring Me Down, Mr. Blue Sky, Telephone Line. Although I will have to say Telephone Line.
Okay, nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. But I'll pick Shine a Little Love. And one that's really grown on me lately from the album after Secret Messages.
Balance of Power,
Calling America.
Okay. Calling, you like that one, huh?
I do like it. Even though it's a drum machine and it's not even Bev Bevan.
No. And the album was just totally done just because contractually they had to, right?
Yeah.
But Secret Messages, I think that's an album if you have not dived into yet, really dive into it because I did that in Mana.
It's the only ELO album I don't own.
Secret Messages, I think I like better than Time Now, which I hate to say that, but I do.
Horror.
I do. And it recently got – so, again, Secret Messages was supposed to be a double LP.
Mm-hmm. And kind of like a Red Rose Speedway situation.
Yeah, and even Time was supposed to be a double LP, as I read on the Hoffman forums today. But Secret Messages was just got re-released as a vinyl only double LP last year, I believe, only vinyl, but it was the original album as it was supposed to be, and it's really awesome.
Should I pick up an original or should I get the two LP?
I would get the original just to get your feet wet with the record. Secret Messages, the title track, awesome. Bluebird, Take Me On and On, Letter from Spain, great song on there called Danger Ahead, which is just like almost, it's just an awesome, I'll send it to you after the show. But
And the obligatory Beatles connection with that record is famously there was a song recorded during those sessions that has never been officially released.
Yes.
And it's only been kind of heard, you know, in varying qualities at Beatles Forever.
Yeah. Beatles Forever.
I knew it was supposed to be on Secret Messages. And then when I saw they were going to do a double LP, it's like, are they going to put Beatles Forever on it?
But they didn't.
And they didn't.
They did not.
No, but it's not a very good song.
No, it's not. No, it's not. And we'll get to the Beatle connections here with time as we kind of talk about more of the songs. I would think on time, there's only one or two tracks that I would kind of just, I consider like duds, just mm-hmm. really not really fans of them. And that would be another Heartbreaks.
I don't know if you feel that like. That one's just the instrumental.
Yeah, the dun dun.
Yeah.
Dun dun.
Well, I don't mind that. Like, I don't think there's a bad song on the record.
Really? There's not one song where you just go, you know.
I mean, I have tracks that, like, it's not my favorite, but there's nothing on this album that I would say is skip-worthy. Nothing that would make me
go up
to my turntable and, you know, take the arm and move it.
Fair enough. Fair enough. One of the ones that was always a big moat was like that Yours Truly 2095 with the robot lady voice. Oh my God.
I love you sincerely. Yours Truly. I can't do a robot voice.
Yeah. And this whole theme of like 1981 being like the year they got to get back to, which for me is crazy because that's the year I was born.
Yeah.
So it's like,
that's 40 years ago this year.
Yeah, I know. Don't remind me.
Yeah. How old are you again?
Yeah, right. So, you know, trying to get back to 1981, you know, is it 1981? It's like, what? I remember hearing this song when I got the scene. I'm like, what the hell is this? Yours, you know, what the hell am I listening to, you know?
Well, let's start with the album and then we can get to that because that's track two, technically track three.
True, yeah.
Should we bother with the prologue?
I say we go with the prologue.
Okay. I'll let you take the prologue.
Okay, open.
I don't have anything of note to say.
I just like it because, again, I like concept albums. I'm a prog rock guy, so I love concept albums. So anything that sets the stage of like, hey, this is the opening of of something, I like. Because it totally sets the mood. And, of course, in ELO fashion, you've got the vocoder, you know, and I think it's the line is just over the corner of your waking mind, there lies something or other, you know. And then, you know, again, just sets the mood perfectly for me before it goes into one of the singles, which is Twilight, which is track two or track one, depending on how you're keeping score there at home.
Yeah. Oh, Twilight.
Tell me about Twilight.
Okay, I'll tell you about. Well, I'll tell my experience with Twilight. I didn't even discover this song truly until maybe less than a year ago, and this is going to put me squarely in the Generation Z camp. I saw a TikTok song in the background, and I'm like, oh, this is nice. It sounds very 80s. I'm like, this sounds just like ELO. This sounds like Jeff Lynne. And then I looked at the scrolling text and it said, oh, it is ELO. Like, what is this?
I mean, you have a very good ear for music. You would have known that was ELO the second you heard it. You had to.
Yeah. Well, it's like, this is either ELO or a very convincing copy of them.
Yeah.
I found it through TikTok.
You found it through a TikTok, I know what that is. Okay.
Yeah.
I have TikTok. But I can't believe you saw it on a TikTok video. So this is only about a year ago you discovered Twilight?
Maybe 6 months ago.
Yeah. Falsetto all throughout this song, classic ELO in it.
It was that falsetto that got me because it was kind of like, How do I describe it? It wasn't like this. It wasn't a straight note. It was like going up just a little, like with your head
held high, yeah. Your star that night. Yeah,
and I'm like, oh, that sounds awesome.
Yeah. And again, so much of this music has the Beatles hooks all over it.
Well, I would say the overwhelming influence on this album, in my opinion, isn't the Beatles.
Isn't or is?
It sounds more kind of like late 50s, early 60s R&B.
Well, a couple tracks. Which
like
we'll hear.
Even the chorus, for some reason, sounds like it could have been like a Phil Spector song.
Yeah, with your head held high and your star.
Oh, no, the twilight.
Right.
The like syncopation and the rhythm.
Right. Well, Jeff always would use those. I mean, he loved Del Shannon, right? So he was going to use those influences in here. Yeah, when you hear
I could hear it as like a Del Shannon thing.
Absolutely. To me, I hear all those genres in one here. Mm-hmm. You know, you hear the Beatles Walrus stuff. You hear the Del Shannon, the 50s. You hear the R&B. You hear all, it's everything but the kitchen sink thrown into these tracks.
Well, and it's kind of like a running... It's something I'm undoubtedly going to mention throughout the rest of these songs. It sounds like ELO trying to sound a little bit more futuristic.
Oh, for sure.
You know, because this is the 19... Well, aside from like the story of the album, it's like, this is the 1980s now. Like, what are we about? It's the future and synthesizers and all that stuff. This album is very, very synth heavy.
Very synth heavy. Very synth heavy. So,
but again, it's not like some 80s stuff where it's very synth heavy and the synth is kind of tacky. Into the hands of Richard Tandy.
And the music is still very melodic. Mm-hmm. It's not, the synth is not driving all this stuff. The songs are still song. The songs and the structure of the songs come first, and then you get all that other stuff on top of it.
Yeah.
Which a lot of 80s music is flipped around, right? Production first, instrument synths first, songwriting and melody second. This is not the case with this. This is still very much driven by songs and melody and structure, as Jeff always does. But absolutely love Twilight. Spot on with your analysis there. Great, great album opener. Gets us going, and then before our blood spoils with the, you know, yours truly 2095 into the next track, you know, racing like 1,000 miles an hour.
How do you feel about yours truly 2095?
I hated it when I first got the album, but I really love the I love it now.
The lyrics are so you can't help but smile at just this kind of retro futurism, you know. I wrote one of them down. It's like, she has a jumpsuit on and she's also a telephone.
Yeah. And then what's the other one? She's also an IBM.
Yeah.
Dating ourselves there. She's an IBM.
It kind of feels like it's in that Mr. Roboto camp.
Great analogy. Great analogy. Very Kilroy was here, right?
Yeah.
I'm Kilroy. Right. You know,
Kilroy.
It's just a side note. It's like just so many bands were preoccupied about computers overtaking the world, right? You know?
Yeah.
You know, futuristic computer like Styx, ELO. I mean, there's been plenty of songs and albums that artists that have talked about this. You know, Yes has done it. It's lots of bands have felt about, you know, like the computer age. What's it going to be, you know? Mm-hmm. But 2095, I won't live to see 2095, I don't think. So, you know.
I might.
You might. You will. I won't.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Actually, I'm being rather optimistic.
On 2095, I'd be 100 and something. So, yeah, no.
I would be 93.
Oh, you'll see 2095.
Yeah. Oh, that is if the planet's still, you know, habitable.
Yeah. I don't know.
By that point in time, we'll all just be living in one giant Walmart.
Yeah, I'm sure. I don't know who the female vocalist is on this track. I don't know if she's credited on the album. You know, yeah, though, is that what you want? All that that's going on in this song. I don't know if she's credited on here.
I can take a look at the liner. I'll
take a look right now. Let's see.
Where is the record? There's the record.
Jeff Lynne says in the liner notes on the CD, which, do you have the CD or no?
I don't have the CD, but so, I have the liner notes are on the
thing. Right. So on the CD, it has Jeff's kind of comments on the tracks now.
Yeah.
So he says about
girl's voice on Yours Truly 2095 by Sandy.
Sandy. Okay. So here's Jeff's little, so Jeff has like a little, you know, statement on about each track on the CD reissue. He says, typical, it's about a bloke who falls for a robot. Say no more. That's what he says.
Yeah, as you do.
Yeah. Yeah, she has an IQ of 1,001. She has a jumpsuit on. She's also a telephone.
That, I think, is the most 80s lyric possible. A you know, song about, you know, computers taking over the world. She has a jumpsuit on.
She has a jumpsuit on. Yeah.
That's the future.
That's the future, man.
Jumpsuits.
Jumping ahead to the next track.
Oh, you bastard.
What? Fun.
Yeah, me? Jumping ahead.
Yes. Well, you want to keep going? Keep going on Yours Truly if you
yeah,
want.
Yeah, no, I'm just saying pun related.
Jumpsuit. Yeah, I'm not even saying. I've done. Listen, jumpsuits, we're jumping. Ticket to the Moon. Jeff says here on the 2001 liner notes, drama in space. Piano ballad.
The good old 1980s.
Right. So here we go with the end of this whole kind of the 1980s. We're going back in time to remember that, like, you know, how good the 80s were, which, you know, which I believe was another single off of this album.
Probably.
I also know that it was the title of another greatest hits collection that they also had to ring. Volume 2, Greatest Hits, Ticket to the Moon.
From the mid-2000s or something.
Yeah, Ticket to the Moon. Decent song. Not, you know, just kind of opens up with a, you know, keyboard, you know, got a ticket to the moon. Mm-hmm. Enjoy the track. Favorite? Not a favorite?
It's not my favorite.
Not your favorite.
Not my favorite.
Agreed.
It's okay.
Yeah.
I dig the harmonies.
Harmonies on Ticket to the Moon are good.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, because there's not, it's just, other than, you know, the pianos and stuff. I mean, you've got the atmospheric stuff going on throughout the whole track, really the whole album. But Ticket to the Moon, Flight Leaves Here Today from Satellite 2.
I forgot to mention at the end of Twilight, going into Yours Truly 2095, there was that kind of, you know, soft, ethereal, like kind of almost, it sounds almost backwards bits. That's throughout the whole album. I love it.
Hearing those little, yes.
Yeah. Even though it's just bits kind of, or reconstituted paste of 21st Century Man.
Yes, which we'll get to that one in a few songs.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure we have a few.
That's a whole side away.
It is. And I'm sure we'll have a lot to say about that track.
Yeah.
I'm
sure you will. My notes are not terribly extensive.
Really?
On that song.
Okay. At least you did notes. I don't do notes for these guys, these shows with you guys. I just do whatever's up here.
What do you mean, you guys?
You and Tom, you guys like write notes down and stuff. I'm like, let's just go for it.
Okay.
You do your homework though, which is to be commended.
In the last week, I've probably listened to this album 6 times.
Yeah. I did not. I listened to it maybe twice. Only because I've had it for 20 years.
Yeah.
So
I'm making up for lost time.
Time. There's that word again.
Yeah. It's almost like that's a common word.
Listen, time waits for nobody, including Jeff Lynne. Okay, track 5, The Way Life's Meant to Be.
Go. Oh, I love this song. This is the song that really has that major Phil Spector sound with the I don't even know what the instrument is, the little like clicky sounds.
Like maracas or something, right? So it's not maracas, but it sounds, I know what you mean.
It's like those things that's like, I don't know what they're called, but you go like, they're like little plastic things.
Yes. Meant to be. Yep.
Yeah.
This one also has that kind of, has that 50s, like you said, quality to it.
Yeah.
Which is so weird because here you are like doing like a sci-fi time travel 80s album. And now we're going back to like 50s music. Mm-hmm. But it's this is a definite highlight for me as well.
Because do you think this is like a straight, you know, futurism album? Or do you think it's like paying homage to like the kind of sci-fi from yesteryear? That's all about the future. Because I get that kind of sense a little. Of course, I haven't read that much up on the backstory of the record.
Right, right.
But it wouldn't surprise me.
Well, because remember in the 50s, there was always like talk about, you know, future and sci-fi. Yeah. And so there's
the Jetsons.
Right. Yeah, I think it's a little bit of both to your point there, Ethan. You know, he says in the liner notes here, we tried a few studios around Europe and recorded this song in each one. Because I know a lot of ELO's music was recorded at Musicland in Munich in Germany. Right.
Yeah.
And of course,
imagine having that kind of money as a band. That's like, I'm not even going to attempt a Birmingham accent. Yeah, guys, let's try this. You know, oh, we don't like it here. Let's do it over here. And then you do it four times.
And of course, Mac was their producer. I think the guy's name was Mac. I don't know what his real name is, but he's only credited as Mac.
Yeah, that's all you need.
Yeah, but this is the way life's meant to be is definitely a standout on Time, mm-hmm. for sure. Del, shades of Del Shannon in this, you know, could have almost been a Wilburys track.
Oh, that could have. Oh, I can hear Roy singing this.
See what I'm saying?
Yeah.
This could have been on the Wilburys.
Roy and you know, I wonder, Tom. I could hear Tom singing like this, the, oh, I wonder.
Right?
Yeah.
This could have been a Wilburys track. Meant to be. Yeah.
If this album had been recorded 10 years later, George would have been on here somewhere.
No doubt.
Same with Tom.
Yeah. Side one
probably,
ends.
Probably not Roy.
Probably not Roy. Side one. What song includes side one?
Another Heartbreaks.
Okay. Because I'm only looking at the album is there, but I'm looking at the CD. Okay. So we go to the next one, which is just an instrumental, which breaks up the album.
I like it. The melody feels a little, I wrote it in my notes as faintly like spaghetti Western music from the future.
How'd you come up with that analysis?
Like it kind of sounds like, the soundtracks like The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, mm-hmm. kind of like Morricone, but. Or at least melodically, it sounded like that to me, kind of. I don't know.
Yeah, it just plods along. Let Jeff's notes here say, an instrumental. I used an Oberheim synthesizer to try to sound like a guitar. This was definitely the time when synthesizers were taking over.
Yeah.
I think the synths were already here by this point. I mean, come on. Synths were on the map since the mid-70s here.
Yeah.
You know, they weren't taking over. They were it, you know? Yeah.
Again, it doesn't surprise me that it's an Oberheim though. Yeah. I'm a bit of a synth nerd. And so I love all this stuff. And it's like, yeah, I can hear the Oberheim.
See, I don't even
it was know, very, it was very in vogue for 1981.
You know, I know like Fairlight. Fairlight was a synthesizer, yeah. Right?
That was the sampling one.
Right. I know Yes used the Fairlight a lot. Genesis used the Fairlight a lot.
Well, of course, you have like the Moogs. You have
the Moogs go back to the 70s.
The Prophet 5.
Yeah. You know, I know Queen, side note, Queen always got accused of using synths in their music, but yeah, they always just say, no, we don't use synths.
They had that on, like, was it the back cover or the liner notes for each Queen album? It's like, no synths.
Yeah, yeah, like the back cover. So, you know, it's... Because a lot of people, I guess, back in the day would look at synthesizers as a way of cheating. You know, I know that the Beatles used to think that, like, when they would bring the Mellotron in, you know, or, like, the Moog, you know, it was considered a big no-no because you're taking somebody's job away, you know? I mean, back then, 60s, you know, it was considered a big, you know. And, of course, the 70s, you know, you come in and you have Keith Emerson and Rick Wakeman and all these kind of virtuosos using, you know, Tony Banks using crates of keyboards and synths all over the place in their music. And I don't think it detracts from the music, the ELO or otherwise.
No, I don't think so either. Although, could you imagine how funny it would be if ELO went on tour in like 1972 and all they had was just like a couple Mellotrons?
Ooh, yeah. That would be quite a different show experience.
It would sound a little chintzy, but I think it would sound actually quite cool.
It probably would have. Oh, man. Yeah. So, okay. So we're going
through. And now, here's the point in the show where it's, please turn me over.
Side two, which I think, if I'm going to go gun to my head, I think I like side two better than side one.
Hold on. Let me look. I actually don't know.
Is it a tie?
It's a tie.
Oh, now the song that opens up side two. Damn. This is one of my favorite all time. This is top 10 ELO songs for me. I mean,
when I was saying my picks earlier for favorite ELO stuff, I was trying to avoid stuff from this record.
Naturally, because we're talking about it.
Even though I think I still said Twilight.
You did. Now,
This is one of my favorites.
Oh, you actually, a few weeks back when we were talking about this, you classified this song as like Telephone Line 2.0.
Yeah, I called it Son of Telephone Line.
Or so, yeah, right. Which I had never thought of it that way until you said that, and it's pretty accurate. Is it wrong that I like it even better than Telephone Line? Because I do.
No, it sounds like they've had, you know, 5 years or so since Telephone Line, and they've just perfected it.
Ah, this song is just in the beginning, you know. Opens up. It's called. So we're talking about Rain Is Falling, people. Mm-hmm. If you can't tell, we're geeking out here over this track. So Jeff says here in the notes, I think it's about some scientists trying to mess about with time, but it's quite a nice tune. Okay.
He thinks.
Opens up, kind of hearing like this, like raindrops, cloud, and you know. Rain is something, you know, one of the, I think it was either Tandy or said, oh, that's one thing Jeff can really write a good song about, that wet stuff in the sky. Yeah. And this is one of those. And then piano comes crashing down, you know, early in the morning, the sun was up and the sky was a very blue. And you're like, how are you not hooked if you love this music?
Oh, again, that's one of the big similarities to Telephone Line. It starts up with the piano and Jeff singing.
Yeah.
And then it eventually like,
yeah. I think one of the coolest lines in the whole song is that a noise in the city made the children run and hide themselves away. And thunder came lightning down from the sky. And he sings it like in that high falsetto.
Yeah.
Incredible. Incredible. I mean, it's, you know, it's, and then the drums kick in, boom, 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 boom. Looking from this window, you know, it's to me, it's this one has all the hallmark qualities of a Beatles track. That's why I like it. This is like, you could hear John Lennon singing this song.
Yeah. I'm trying to, what is the part in the song that just gets me? It's the, but with all their good intentions and all their good intentions, here I stay. I said intentions twice. Inventions. And all how he goes, intentions. You know, really here high up.
Yeah. And then, of course, you hear our favorite friend, the vocoder, comes in there singing the rain, rain, go away. The old man is snoring. You hear that, yeah. You know, all littered throughout the whole thing. So, like, it's very childlike quality, this song, you know. And I guess that's Richard Tandy, you know. How does it go? The old man is snoring, whatever that nursery rhyme is.
Yeah.
I don't know. But, you know, you hear it littered. You hear it sprinkled underneath the song, you know.
That's how you know we like a song, when all we're doing is just like, oh, and we just have big dumb grins on our faces.
And because that's what it is.
Yeah.
This to me is a quintessential ELO track, just overall, not just for the time of the record, but for me, this is like top 10 ELO.
There's
songs.
That word again.
We're going to hear it a lot, folks.
Yeah.
Would have loved to have heard this one done live at some point, but it was buried as an album cut. And again, the effects, you know, you're hearing the thunder and the lightning into the music. Okay.
I think Jeff, you know what he should do? I think he should take ELO, do like a theater tour and do some, you know, lesser known tracks. Do like a tour of deep cuts.
Yes. Yes. I'm there. I know you'd be there too.
I'd be there. We'd both be there.
Yeah. So rain is falling on opening up side two. It's got everything in it. You're hearing the rain. You're hearing the sound effects. Fantastic melody. Fantastic singing. Awesome through and through. Rain is falling.
Yeah.
That takes us into
From the End of the World.
A little bit of a fast one.
I think this is like the most synth heavy track on the record.
This one.
Yeah.
Yeah. This one has that disco sound that, you know, he gets lambasted for, you know, a little bit. They thought they went a little bit too disco heavy. That's why they thought Discovery was actually just called Disco Very.
Yeah. Well, there's another album by same name, Daft Punk, called Discovery.
Yes.
And that was the whole thing. It's kind of very disco influenced, and so it's Discovery, Disco Very.
Yes. I know you were very broken up about that band calling it quits. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was there, yeah, because I have two records by them, so I was very, you know, I was a late bloomer with them, but I like them too.
Yeah.
But very synth heavy, this track for as well.
There's a theremin like synth throughout the song that I quite like.
Yeah.
I love when the song kind of switches gears a bit with the, I saw you last night, but you didn't answer, and how the actual drums kick in instead of the, you know, drum machine.
Right. Again, opens up very dark and mysterious, you know, kind of like a thunderous, you know, synth beat. Yeah. And then it goes to this part Ethan's talking about now, you know, about a minute or so into the song. I've always enjoyed it as an album track. But you do hear that theremin, I guess, I don't know if it is a theremin, but then it's got that nice little keyboards parts in there as well, quietly, very subtly. Which come out of this, which go back into the song. Yeah. Whoa, whoa. Yeah, I'm listening to it, folks. That's why you're hearing me humming it in my heads. Yeah. The whole song. It's got that whole thing going on through it.
See, this is the best of both worlds. We don't get the copyright infringement takedowns, but still listening to the song as show's going on.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Again, one that I would not skip, but it's just, I just listen to it to keep kind of going to the rest of the album. Okay. Moving on. The lights go down, as Jeff proclaims before it starts. Go, Ethan.
Oh, I love this track. It's another one of those that feels a little 50s-y. I don't know what it is about this song. It sounds familiar. It sounds like familiar and comforting. Especially like the I believe. Like I what feel like it, I've what heard does it this.
Remind you of?
I don't know. It just feels like I've heard this before, and it's like kind of comforting.
I hear more of the retro sound on this as well. Not straight that it's like a 50s or 60s, but it doesn't sound like a traditional ELO song.
And it's got the drum machine instead of Bev. They let him, you know, sleep in or something.
Which we don't know if Bev really liked that or not.
No.
No, he did not.
Again, and I love that, you know, plucked sound throughout the whole song. I don't know if it's actually a guitar or if it's, you know, an Oberheim trying to sound like a guitar. Either way, I'm
listening to it now. It's got to be a synth. It could be that.
Well, it's definitely got like the slapback echo.
Yes, I like that, it because
that's throughout this whole record. The slapback.
Yes, this one's a cool track because you just the song does not deviate from that riff or beat the whole thing. It just starts out.
Yeah.
Jeff delivers a nice vocal on it, I think. You know, it's not buried in a lot of dense production or voices, or there's no kinds of crazy, you know, vocoder stuff going on. And I always enjoyed the Lights Go Down singing, you know, from his singing performance on it as well. Mm-hmm. What does Jeff say about
again,
it?
Again, the harmonies.
No, this is all Jeff has to say about it in the liner notes. I guess the lights went down. So we're guessing he doesn't like this song.
Oh, come on, Jeff.
He didn't like this one. Oh, I forgot to say what he said about From the End of the World. He goes, there goes the four to the bar again. It's got very strange chords. Yes, it did. But Lights Go Down, which takes us into Here Is the News. And Jeff says, oh, this was quite bold at the time. Lots of radio stations phoned up and said, you've nicked those news items from our station. Oh, yeah, right. Actually, they were all made up in the studio, which was a lot of fun. Tell us about this one.
I love the synth in this song. Mm-hmm. But this song feels a little silly to me.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
It doesn't seem... Is there an actual message to the song?
Well, here's the lyrics are not bountiful. Here is the news coming to you every hour upon the hour. Here is the news. The weather's fine, but there may be a meteor shower.
Because it's the future. Ha, ha, ha.
Yeah. Yeah, this one probably wouldn't go in the Hall of Fame in terms of lyrical contributions.
I think the song gets better when it switches into that kind of halftime, you know.
Oh.
You know. It's like, I want my baby back.
Well, he's bringing in those elements of, like, somebody reading the news, right?
Yeah.
Which people thought they actually copyrighted them, huh? But no, it's when you've got a guy like Jeff Lynne, he can do that. Funnily enough, I think, yeah, so you can hear all those guys talking about the news, which again is not, that's been done before. If you've heard Quadrophenia, The Who do it very well at the end of, I believe, The Dirty Jobs, you hear the guy reading the news from the BBC Life program. So, you know, hearing, you know, news clippings interspersed into music is not anything new. I just thought it was funny. Actually, who would have heard this track to say, oh, you stole that from somebody? It wasn't like it was a hit.
No, I don't think it was released as a single.
No,
I'm not even sure if it was released or if it was a B-side. I'm actually going to check that.
Check it out, brother.
Well, because I know there was a video for this.
Really?
Yeah. I first heard this, you know, like a year or two ago when the video started playing like on the YouTube auto cue. I'm like, hello, what is this song? This doesn't sound like ELO. Because it doesn't. No. Okay, hold on. ELO here is...
Check it out. Check it out for us, brother.
I should probably buy a quieter keyboard. Oh, yes. It was a single.
A or B side?
A side. B side.
I was going to say, this had to be a B side. To what? Twilight?
Oh, actually, no. Double A side. To Ticket to the Moon.
Okay, so it was Ticket to the Moon with Here is the News. That wasn't the best.
It hit number four in France.
Wow. See, and again, looking up, the album did very well. It did number one in the UK. So this was not a stinker.
No?
I don't know how it did in America. Let me take a look here real quick.
And actual news stations would use this for... Really? Yeah, it's saying on the Wikipedia, a couple Dutch stations
would use this. Wow. Okay.
Yeah, so as they're like to start their program.
So it went to number one. Timed it went to number one in the UK, and they got to number nine here in the States. So this was not a clunker by any stretch of the imagination. This album sold very well on the backbone of two strong singles, Hold On Tight, which we'll get to in Twilight. I think it just kind of gets forgotten because it was after that huge successful period of ELO. It kind of gets relegated to the, you know, I bought the record 10 years ago for $2. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I mean, it tells you, you know, people don't really rate it highly for whatever reason.
Although it's come around as evidenced by the fact that I paid more than $2 for that.
Yeah, you did. You did. Yeah. How much was your UK copy?
I think it was like 20 or 30.
Wow. 40-year-old record, see?
Yeah.
So, okay, so that's Here's the News, which, you know, take it or leave it. That takes us into another one of my all-time favorites here on the album, 21st Century Man.
Yeah. Not to be confused with 21st Century Schizoid.
Schizoid Man, which is a totally different song.
No, it would be interesting to hear the song done in the style of the other.
Yes, it would. Oh, yeah. Boy.
Like, hold on. Let me pull up the lyrics.
Go for it. All like muffled, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. All Jeff says here in the liner notes is that it's about someone who is lost. Now, I can't prove this, but I subconsciously think this was some kind of tribute to John Lennon. I have no proof for that, but damn, it sure sounds like it.
What makes you think that?
Because he wrote it after he was killed.
Okay.
You know, the album came out in 81. Time was released in what? Summer of 81, July. So I would love to know if somebody out there, maybe Sherrod Ender, our friend on Hoffman, saw this, he could tell us. But I think it's an homage to John. I just do. Though You Ride on the Wheels of Tomorrow, you know, everything about that to me just sounds like it's something about John.
Might be,
you know, and it ties in with the concept. Obviously, we're coming to the end of the album now. But we actually hear this theme repeated in the epilogue as well, do we not?
Yeah.
So
you hear this theme, you know, in the epilogue. You hear it in the prologue. You hear it, you know, after Twilight.
Yeah. I mean, one day you're a hero, next day you're a clown. These are things that we, you know, Lennon's been, you know, painted as over his life.
When you say theme, do you mean like the music or the message?
Message.
Okay. Yeah. No, I'm talking about musically.
Okay.
You hear bits and pieces throughout the album.
No, I know what you meant. Yes. Sprinkled throughout all this. Yeah, I'm talking about the message. What do you give me your thoughts on 21st Century Men? Is it is it one of your go-tos for this album, or are you not really big on it?
I think it feels the most Beatly.
It does.
Out of the tracks on the record. I love the ethereal kind of background vocals throughout the song. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
I will admit it did take a while to warm up to.
Why?
I don't know. It didn't grab me when I first heard the record.
It did not.
It's like, oh, it's kind of a downer. It's slow. It's plodding. But, you know, upon six listens in the past week, it's like, oh, no, I really like this song.
I have that part in the middle, too, when it kind of goes a cappella. You stepped out of a dream, believing everything was gone. You know, to me, I see John when I hear this with these lyrics.
Yeah.
Everything about it, all the ELO trademarks in here. Nice guitar solo too.
Yeah.
Which there's not too many of on this record, but there is on this song. 21st Century Man. Love this song. Love this song. Have you ever actually heard, there's a crappy recording of, ELO doing a Beatles tribute, like a medley, shortly after John died. Have you heard that? It's on YouTube.
I have not.
And it's really sad because you can actually like, it's them doing a day in the life, and you can actually almost hear Jeff Lynne's like voice breaking in it. It's like really emotional.
Yeah.
So I think
I'll have to check that out.
I'll send it to you.
Okay.
I'll send it to you. Partner. You got it. When I hear this song, I just think about John. And again, it could totally not be about John, but it would be nice to think of it as. And it's this and Rain is Falling are my two favorite songs on this album, which are the most Beatle-y, so which is not surprising.
Yeah. And that leads us to Hold On Tight.
Well, we end with kind of, this song is a little bit of a downer, like Ethan said, but then, you know, we close the album with a, you know, the way we opened it, with like a real big kind of, you know, go-getter with the hit off of Time was Hold On Tight, which,
yeah,
you know, and the French lyrics in it as well.
Yeah. Accroche-toi, attends-rêve.
Jeff says, this is one of my jolliest songs, but I do like the sound of it. Tell me about this one. Yay or nay?
Oh, yay. 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 Yay!
Say long try. Yeah. My favorite part of the song is the... When you get so down that you can't get up. I think that's my favorite part of the song.
Yeah.
ELO has such a knack for doing that, right? In all their songs.
Little bits and pieces that, you know, that just change up throughout the song.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Again, sequencing is always very funny when you look at these albums, you know?
Especially, you know, now I'm very curious because if this album was going to be a double album, I want to know what the sequence would have been if it was a double album.
I'll have to send you that post from Poppin' Forum. I read it today.
Those Hoffman people know everything.
They do.
Or at least they say they do.
Right. Well, the double album would have included the bonus tracks, which are on this CD, which are
The Bouncer,
When Time Stood Still, and Julie Doll Doesn't Live Here Anymore, which were B-sides. So they would have been on the double album, I'm sure, as well. But I think as a single album, it does pretty well.
Yeah.
Now, Secret Messages double album was good. But Hold On Tight is just a great track. I don't think he played it live, though, either time I saw him. Did he play it live when you saw him?
I don't think he did.
No.
Actually, I can settle this right now. I will pull up the set list.
Pull it up.
Yellow Toronto 2019. Not Toronto 2000, or not 1978.
How about this? At the time, the song's music video was the most expensive ever made with a budget of £40,000.
Oh, the video is quite cool.
Yes.
The, you know, they're in an old movie.
Right.
No, they did. They didn't play it.
They didn't think so. See, okay.
They didn't play Twilight.
Oh, they didn't play Twilight. The mostly black and white video features ELO footage playing the song in a lounge, intercut with scenes of a 1940s serial film featuring the band members, including violinist Mick Kaminsky, who was no longer a band member, nor had actually played on the song, playing a guitar. Wow. So they threw Mick a bone and threw him in the video, even though he was out of the band.
I mean, a payday is a payday.
Yeah. And the B-side was When Time Stood Still. Yeah. Yeah, Hold On Tight. One of those songs that I think has also been used in lots of commercials, right? And advertising. Advertisers love Hold On Tight. Mm-hmm. It's been used in a lot.
Maybe second to only Don't Bring Me Down.
Oh, God, yeah. Cell phones, McDonald's, God knows they've been in everything.
You could probably sell an atomic bomb with Don't Bring Me Down.
You probably could.
Yeah.
And movies, too. It was in some of them, what was that movie? Donnie Brasco. Have you ever saw Donnie Brasco with Al Pacino? Don't Bring Me Down is featured in that film in a great scene. You'll have to watch it.
Okay.
And then we close out in classic concept album fashion with an epilogue, Shades of 21st Century Man. Take us into it with the whole Though You Ride on the Wheels of Tomorrow, which I think is so weird because it's like we just heard the song like a song ago and now you're reprising it as we close the album out a little bit.
Yeah.
I thought that was weird.
Well, the epilogue... What got me is how abruptly it ended.
Yes.
It just not quite a day in the life-y.
No, actually.
Not too dissimilar.
It actually, what it reminded me of? It reminds me of the end of ELP's Carnival 9 30-minute song. Because that just ends abruptly, too. And this, obviously that's a 30-minute song. But it's just, if you've never heard Carnival 9... It just ends. And this does the same thing. You're hearing, oh, it's nicely, it's going to gently, it just stops. It just stops.
So overall thoughts?
Overall thoughts on Time. If I'm listing my top four or five ELO records, this is going to be probably two or three. This is going to probably come out of the blue one, probably this two. Maybe Secret Messages 3 and then A New World Record 4. Definitely top three. I would rate it probably 8 out of 10.
I may go so far as to put this at number one or two.
Awesome.
Ranking the second to A New World Record.
Second to A New World Record.
Yeah.
So you liked it that much?
Yeah.
That's good. See, I'm glad I suggested this record then. See, got you to listen to a record and now you dig it. I knew you would because it's just so wacky and weird with all the futuristic, synth stuff, which I knew you liked anyway. So I'm glad you agreed to do this one.
Well, I'm glad you suggested it and I'm glad we did it.
Time, Baby by ELO. Celebrating its 40th anniversary this year. Wouldn't it be nice to get a deluxe version of this?
That it would be nice. What if they put out a 2 LP or of this?
Bought. Sold. Next.
There you go. Two copies right there. You and me.
Yeah. So, it's been fun revisiting Electric Light Orchestra and diving back into the world of Jeff Lynne. Does it take much of us to dive back into Jeff Lynne? We just call me and say, Andy, let's do this. Sure, Ethan, we'll do it.
Yeah, you had me at Jeff Lynne.
Done. All right, so things I have to send you. I need to send you that YouTube video of him singing Day in the Life. I have to send you the documentary, Mr. Blue Sky, as well, which I will do as soon as we're done with this show. Next month, we don't know which one we're going to do yet, but Ethan will choose.
Ethan will choose.
And, you know, you people out there will be.
He's already got some ideas, too.
Yes, he does. Ethan will choose. And in a few weeks, we are recording this on May 30th. So we want to get this posted to hold true to our, we're doing one show a month and we have a grand total of one day left to get it posted.
Yeah. Cause we were going to record this last week and then we didn't. And then we were going to record it last Thursday. And then, you know, schedules are a scary beast.
They really are, man. But we did.
Plus, you actually have things going on in your life,
and you do and too.
I'm a freeloading parasite.
No, you're not.
I will tell you, I am.
Maybe he will. Well, I'll take that up. I'll take that up.
Punk ass kid from Canada.
So he's sitting there chopping his broccoli at work.
Yeah.
But thanks, everybody, for listening to and watching the second installment.
Should we do some plugging?
Plug away, baby. Plug away.
You plug first.
Well, this is show number two for us, for Ethan and I. I'm also co-host of the Paul McCartney podcast, Two Legs, with my partner, Tom Hunyadi. And those of you that watch this show, no doubt, I think I've watched that one as well as the rest of the shows in our little Beatle podcasting universe. We recently just dropped show number 130 this past weekend, where we talked about, Paul's last great, last good, and first worst album that posted yesterday. What do you think I picked for first bad?
Wildlife.
Winner. Winner, winner. Tom went with, want to guess what Tom went with?
Pipes of Peace.
Winner again. Very good. That's a smart guy right there, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah. He knows. Yeah.
Tom told me.
Oh, he did tell you, that bastard. So,
The show's been out for a day, so I could have said, yeah, I watched it.
Listen, you're a busy guy, you know. Yeah. So
I'm a mover / shaker.
You are. So we dropped that. We also do a show once a week, sometimes, called Ranking the Tracks, where this partner of mine here on Anything But the Beatles does some incredible thumbnail work, getting photos of me and Tom in not the most weird positions, but always.
Yeah, that only happened once, and that wasn't used.
No, it wasn't. But Ethan does a great job with the artwork, promoting that show on our YouTube channel. And coming to the end of that series, actually, as of this recording, we have to rank the non-album tracks of the 2000s. And then also finally wrapping it up with McCartney 3 in a few weeks. So we've been busy doing that. So you can find us on YouTube. We're at almost 600 subscribers. We've hit a little bit of a wall with the subscribers, but, you know, it is what it is. Oh,
boo-hoo. You and your 500-something subscribers. I have 220.
Okay. Well, you interview a lot of people. You'll surpass us because we
world's smallest violin.
I know you'll surpass us because I don't think we're going to get many more. To be honest with you, I'd love to get 1,000, but I don't see it happening.
Oh, you will.
I don't see it happening.
You will.
We try to stick to a pretty
hold more contests.
Hold more contests. Well, that was the idea. Yeah, and you know any prizes we have are going to. Up north to Canada. So
yeah,
that's about it, because the work that Ethan's done for
us. I'm the winner.
He is the winner because the work that he's done, not only for the thumbnails, but he helps us periodically with our website, which probably is out of date by about 4 or 5 episodes because I just don't have the time to update it.
Jesus.
Which Ethan goes in, I'll send Ethan messages. Can you please go into the website and update it, please? And he does. So he really is the backbones and, support line for
Two Legs. I'm single-handedly responsible for Two Legs.
He certainly is, and we couldn't do it without him, so we're so happy that he's come into our lives.
Much to the chagrin of other podcasts.
Well, screw them then. You're with us, and we're happy to have you, and we really thank you for everything you do for us. So that's all I got to plug. Now your turn.
All right, I'll keep it short and sweet. Fans on the Run, that's what I do. It's a show. It's on YouTube. Look up my name. I'll be there.
look up your name, you know, the number,
something like that. Instagram, you know, Facebook, Twitter, they're pretty much all the same username. I'm not hard to find.
Your most recent episode was with a lady by the name of Natalia Cardenas.
Yep, Natalia Cardenas, who runs the Cynthia Lennon Daily Instagram page, and she's the host of the She Loves You podcast.
Okay, I was going to ask you what the connection was, so now I know.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, so Fans on the Run, check him out. Ethan's been... he's had his channel and for about over a year now, a year and a half, maybe.
Yeah. Oh, I don't know if it's been a year and a half, but it's been over a year.
Wow.
I'm no longer the new guy. Although someone commented when I posted one of my new episodes, they were like, "Ugh, another effing podcast."
Well, then don't. As I tell all these people, yeah, if you don't like it, no, don't the watch.
Word effing written like E-F-F-I-N, because I would say fucking. Podcast. Oh, if the guy was a coward
or a clown, as I like to call them.
There you go.
So, yeah, those are our two respective podcasts, and this is just a little once a month venture where we talk about anything but Beatles music, and we have a hell of a time doing it because we spend so much time and energy surrounding the Beatles with our respective shows, and it's nice to switch off and dive into some other genres, which we can do with this.
Yeah. Because there's lots of other music that those four Beatles didn't make.
Yeah. Now, okay, you want to say ELO is a little bit of a Beatles offshoot? Fine, but it's different.
Pretty much all music from the past 50 years is a Beatles offshoot, in fair. One way or another.
Very fair. Very fair. So, if you have not heard Time, or you don't, or not interested in it, just give it another listen. Because as I found,
take the time and listen to Time again.
It is, because it was a record that I really wanted to talk about, and Ethan didn't know it, and he's like, "Okay, I'll give it a shot." And here we are, and we've summed it up for you in about an hour and change. So thank you, everybody.
You can go home now.
You don't have to go home, but you can't stay here.
Yeah, and remember, hold on tight to your dreams.